Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
What's happening, man?
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you this morning?
Doing really good. It's actually afternoon over here, but...
hey, we'll take it, man. We'll take it. You're just ahead of me, that's all.
Yeah, that's all it is. So I've been looking on the website, ambitious.com.
Yeah.
I just want to get into it. It seems that you are trying to compete with BuzzFeed and Buzz.com. What possessed you to do that?
The fact that I wanted to build a BuzzFeed or a Vice.com. Less of a BuzzFeed, more of a Vice. Thrillist is another one kind of on our radar. We like their business model better, where they have both advertising and commerce. So I come from a very direct response background, copywriting heavy background. I mean, I run an agency now, is the day job. We really wanted to merge content with commerce and build $100 million, $200 million, $300 million a year business. And so that's what possessed me, if you will.
Well, Vice has a pretty serious team. How big is your team?
Right now, the Ambitious team is 5, and we're self-funding the entire thing. Vice this year will do $1 billion in sales with a, you know, global. I love what they're doing globally. I love what they're doing with distribution as far as going direct to the mobile carriers. They also have, obviously, the cable stuff, the deal with HBO. They're also in syndication for their own Vice TV channel. I mean, they're changing the game for media, and I kind of just want to follow in their footsteps. I'll be number two. I'll be happy being number two. If they're doing $1 billion, I'll be happy number two at like $500 million. I'll be happy with that.
Fair enough. Who is your ideal customer for this? Because it keeps asking about being ambitious and things like that. Like, I'm trying to figure out who is the exact person that should be looking at those.
Yeah, so it is the post-college figuring out what the heck they want to do with their life. It's the person who was very ambitious in school. They were going to school. They were in a fraternity or sorority. They were doing extracurricular activities, intramurals. They were joining the debate team, and they were doing all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, they got a 9-to-5 job, and they're like, oh, shit, this is it? Like, I work 9-to-5, and then I go to the bar on Friday. I want more from life. I want to contribute more. I want to be active. I want to do all these things. And that's really who we're talking to. So they don't wake up at 30, 35, 40, and they go, man, I just wasted the 15 best years of my life when I should have been physically fit, where I should have been setting myself up, where I could have been building my career. And instead, I'm just sitting looking at a screen for 12 hours a day. So it really is the post-college through 30s in that demographic. And it's the person who right now they're spending Friday nights sitting on the couch watching a Netflix marathon, and they know that they should be doing something better with their life.
Yeah, that explains it a little more. Because when I thought of ambitious, when I was ambitious in those years, the last thing I would be doing is looking on the web, reading articles. But the moment I did join the corporate world, that was the first thing I would be doing. So that makes a lot of sense. So you're in the same type of niche as like the screw the 9-to-5 guys, as James Altucher with the choose yourself. It's for the people working. So kind of like someone watching Shark Tank and hoping they're going to make a business one day. And you're just trying to get them to actually make that step.
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. A is it's showing them that there's people out there like them that aren't accepting, we'll call it the status quo. So the hip hop artist who will stop at nothing to record his album where other people would have stopped. I want to show and tell their stories so they can see, oh, wow, there's other people doing this who are just like me, who are in unfortunate situations, who might not have the financial means, who don't have the connections, who are starting from nothing, starting from zero. But then I also don't just want to inspire them with stories. I actually want to then give them the how to. How do I actually do this? If I want to go and travel, how do I actually travel? How do I afford that travel? I want to do this thing. How do I create the revenue and the income to do that? I want to start a business. How do I do that? I want to get in shape. How do I actually do that? So it's the inspiration, and then it's also the how-to that we really want to tackle here.
So how are you monetizing this at the moment?
That is a great question. So what we're doing is we're monetizing at a few different levels. A is we have ads on the site, right? Which is how every one of these media companies makes money. I do not want to be ad dependent because I think that is a terrible idea. It is, you're hoping and praying that an advertiser is going to give you money. Now, I do think that it's a good way to monetize the folks who will never go deeper with your brand and with your business. So just the passerby, I might as well make a penny or two off of them versus nothing. But I think that's where the ads come in. Second step is building a very, very large email database of these folks and selling them products and services. So everything from affiliate products and services, from partners, from sponsors, from advertisers, to actually having our own products and services. We're about to launch our flagship product, the Ambitious Academy, where we'll have that. We'll have monthly membership sites, but then we also have physical products. So we're partnering with a few travel agencies to offer travel experiences and excursions on a high ticket end. We'll have local events. So we're about to actually launch Ambitious Local, where we're going into local marketplaces and showing people how to be more ambitious just in their local community and town. So we're starting in the United States. We're starting in mid-markets. So we're not going to the New York cities, the Los Angeleses, the Chicagos. We're starting in mid-markets like a Salt Lake City, where there's 300,000 people between the ages of 21 and 25 who have no one talking to them and no voice. I want to go to them and start and talk to them. So we're going to start doing local stuff, local events, local marketing. So monetization, advertising on the front end, back end is get the email addresses and sell them stuff, because I believe that the real money comes in commerce and having their email addresses, getting data on what they're purchasing, and then building out, whether we're building the products ourselves or going to people that have products and services and creating, whether it's white label products. So like the Bulletproof Coffee guys, I would love to go and have Ambitious Coffee for our guys and put them on subscription, because I think that that helps you, because ambition, I believe, starts in the morning. So products and services is really where I think that the bulk of the revenue is going to come from. And again, we kind of took that model from Thrillist versus Vice, where Thrillist has JackThreads on the back end of their business. So out of the 100 million, 70 million of that is coming from JackThreads. Only 30 is coming from the ad side. So the big upside for us is in selling stuff. The good news is I've sold a lot of stuff between myself and my two business partners. We sold over $1 billion worth of products and services through infomercials, commercials, direct mail, online stuff. So I really want to sell them stuff to help them live more ambitiously.
One of the things I've seen on the About page is that you know how to write content that people will read and then act on, which is not as easy as you would think. I see people writing things all over. I see blogs, but most people don't actually buy anything from these blogs. Can you walk me through how do you write an article that people will read and actually do something after they read it?
Yeah, so I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I think this is where a lot of bloggers fail, and it's where we failed initially, is we thought that someone would read an article about an ambitious person. So we call it ambitious humans on the site. And they would read an article about an ambitious human and they go, oh my God, I want to be like that guy. Let me opt in and let me go through the rest of the stuff. And we fell flat on our face. That was not the case whatsoever. So we were building this great content. We were driving a lot of traffic to the site. People were reading the articles, loving the articles, but we couldn't get them to take action. So we added in some steps to the process. A is we've started to force the opt-in, and you can be for this or against it, but if you don't tell someone exactly what to do and you don't really force them to do what you want them to do, they're not going to take the action. So we've been experimenting with popovers, with light boxes, with full screen takeovers, with all kinds of stuff on that front to force the opt-in. And that has been working really well. The second thing that we've been doing is we're trying to make our journalists, those who are writing the posts, into the next star. So if you look at, like, in the States here, Fox News. So people might watch Fox News for Fox News, but they're really going to Fox News to watch Bill O'Reilly or Rick Sanchez or Fox and Friends or whoever the celebrity is on the site. So I said, you look at a BuzzFeed, which you asked me about earlier. No one knows who writes BuzzFeed articles. No one has a clue. So what I really wanted to do is make my journalists very powerful. And this has been really big in building lists to get people to take action on. And so at the end of every post, there's actually an opt-in box to opt into that author's subscription. So Kimberly Bocek is one of our writers. And so at the end of all Kimberly's posts, it says, hey, did you like this article from Kimberly? Want more ambitious stuff like this from her, with her curated stuff and her ambitious product suggestions. And so we're making them the star, which also leads back into what I just talked about. The e-commerce is now I'm building a brand behind Kimberly. So much like a Bill O'Reilly can go out and write books and he can do tours and he can do speaking engagements. Well, I can do the same thing with all my writers and create joint venture businesses for all them. It's very enticing for the writer because now they're not just getting paid per post, but we're actually helping them to build a brand behind what they're doing. So that's been very instrumental in getting people to take action. The third thing is retargeting, right? So getting folks to the website to read content and then dropping a pixel on them and then following them around on Facebook or on the Google network. So now we're getting them to go straight to an opt-in page. So they come, they read content about an ambitious human. We then follow them around with a retargeting ad that then drives directly to some type of an opt-in page, a landing page, where it's a more direct solicitation. So that's how we've been getting people to take action, is really a multi-pronged approach. Because if we just put up great content, I don't think that we'd be getting the traction we'd be getting. And we definitely wouldn't be getting the numbers that we want to get to that $100 million level. We would be nowhere close. So I think you need a multi-pronged approach. I think that's where bloggers, maybe they get lazy and they just say, hey, if I write good stuff, people will take action. They might, but you really need to have mechanisms in place to make them take the action that you want them to take.
These riders that work for you, they are personal brands within the main brand. Now, when you get someone that comes onto the team, what systems do you have in place to make sure that their personality does show off in the articles? Because when someone writes, a lot of the time they're just trying to write what they think someone wants to read, and they don't really show themselves within it. So there's got to be a system that you developed for that to happen.
This is actually something we've been spending a lot of time on. And so what we actually do is we put people through a 4-week internship before we start developing them as a personality. We get a lot of our writers from colleges, whether they're juniors going into their senior year of university, where they are looking to build that portfolio, or they're out of college and they're looking to build a portfolio and a brand for themselves. And then we also get professional writers who know that this is a great platform for them to be seen and be heard. But we put everyone, no matter where they're at, on this 4-week internship path, we call it. And essentially what they do is they write 2 posts a week, every week for those 4 weeks. And they're different types of posts. So we focus them on different types of content. We do this for 2 reasons. One is to incentivize them to say, hey, even if this doesn't work out, after 4 weeks, you're going to have 8 pieces of unique original content that's been posted on an international website that's gotten a lot of traction that you now have in your portfolio staple. So the first week they write what we call Insta list. So this is like your BuzzFeed, 14 ways to X, 17 reasons to Y, 14 best burgers in Orlando, whatever that type of post is. So we get them to write 2 list posts because they really need to do that. As much as from a copywriting standpoint, I hate those types of articles. They drive a lot of freaking traffic. And so you can't ignore the fact that people love top 10 lists, right? And so we start with them writing 2 types of posts like that. The second week of the internship, we go into 2 current event type of posts. So go out there and find current events that are relevant to the 20-something crowd and commentate on them. And so that could be a new trailer that came out on the movie side. That could be someone who just did something ambitious. That could be a big event. So Burning Man in the United States just happened. So why would ambitious 20-somethings want to or want not to go to Burning Man? So those are like current events. The third week of the internship, we have them go out and we have them do 2 interviews, because this is the big part of our brand and our website is finding the people who are doing ambitious things. It's our ambitious humans. That's been our most popular post to date. And I think it will continue to be our most popular post, is talking about people, because stories are contagious. People love hearing a great story, whether it's motivational or inspirational or tragedy to triumph, whatever it is. People love great stories. So we have them do 2 interviews. We have them reach out to their own network, but we also help them to find some of these interviews if they can't find them. We also teach them to dream big. They don't have to interview, the guy down the street, because we have media and people. And this is a really big lesson for those listening, is that when you have media, you can actually leverage that media to get into doors that you didn't think were actually open to you, because everybody wants to be interviewed. Everyone wants to be on media. So you can go get big best-selling authors. You can get some celebrities. You can go get business rock stars. You can get cool people because they want to be profiled on the site because it's exposure to them. So we actually teach them how to do that. So that's week 3 is 2 interviews. Then week 4, we call it a wild card week. They get to write 2 things on anything that they want. So again, at the end of those 4 weeks, they get these awesome 8-piece portfolio, and then we pick and choose who we want to continue to keep on the site and then develop a personality around them. So that's how it starts, is with that 4-week internship. Then once they come on board, they sit with myself and my editor, and we actually then create a brand plan for them. So who are they going to be? Are they going to be the 20-something real estate guy? Are they going to be the 20-something financial guy? Are they going to be the 20-something entertainment guy? Whatever that brand is, and then we help them to develop that brand, and then we develop a 12-week plan to then create that personality. So what are the staple of articles that they need to create to be branded as that personality? Who do they need to interview? Where do they need to be seen? What are the types of content that we need? And we create that plan together with them over the course of those 12 weeks. And then we reevaluate. For some folks, this is going to be long-term. For some, this is going to be short-term and it might not work out. But regardless, we're getting great content, we're getting eyeballs, and we're really trying to help our writers to develop the brand in the process. So that's kind of the system that we have them on right now.
That's an extensive system. So if you want to sell something, let's say, and you want the reader to take action on that, what's the process? Because you probably work backwards. You've tried to figure out what action you want them to take and then work backwards from there. How do you create the media for that? How do you find a title? What kind of article do you write? How do you figure out the call to action? Like, what's the process for creating that piece of media if you know the thing you want to sell already?
So that's a great, great question. And that is something that, if I'm being 100% honest and transparent, we are trying to figure out. Because of this 20-something market, the biggest thing I can say about this market, so I'm just out of the market. I'm 32, about to be 33, so I'm not quite a 20-something anymore, even though I'm young at heart, but I'm not quite a 20-something anymore. They have the biggest BS filters in the entire world, meaning that if we write something that's not authentic to them, that's not in their voice, they see right through it. And so from a commercial standpoint, we have to be very careful about what we're trying to do, what we're trying to position. Because again, they can kind of see right through, oh, he's just trying to sell me something. So we want to make sure that we're adding value, that we're actually helping them in their life. And that what I learned from the Thrillist guys is they make recommendations. They don't do reviews. So what this marketplace really wants is someone to tell them, if you want this result, do this. And so that's been something that we've been really working on with our email campaigns and with our sales campaigns, is going out there and not reviewing a product, not reviewing a restaurant or reviewing somewhere that they should travel, but actually saying, hey, if you want this type of experience, if you want to do this type of thing, do A, B, and C. And so we have to get that trust with them that if they do A, B, and C, they're going to get that result. And I think that's been gotten us the most respect from the marketplace. That's gotten us the most trust in the marketplace. And that is starting to get us the most sales, is when we're super transparent and we say, yeah, there's a monetary relationship here. But if you want this awesome experience, if you want to be more ambitious, if you want to do this, if you want to do X, you need to do A, B, and C in order to get there. That has worked really well with this marketplace, with the 20-something marketplace. And so going back to your question, how do we set that campaign up, is you're right. We do look at, hey, here's the outcome that we want. We want to sell a bunch of t-shirts, and we want to sell a bunch of t-shirts that have this mission on it because we partnered with this nonprofit and we want to raise some funds for this nonprofit. Well, I don't just want to go and profile that nonprofit because they can see right through it. Their BS meter goes up. They're just pimping this nonprofit out. And so we're partnering right now with a nonprofit called Entrepreneurs International, which is a group of entrepreneurs who donate their book royalties to third world countries and developing educational and entrepreneurial systems for children in these third world countries. And so we're partnering with them. We're doing a t-shirt campaign and some other stuff, but essentially we're selling t-shirts for them, trying to get into the 20-something crowd to get them excited about this movement. But we didn't want to just go and say, hey, here's Entrepreneurs International, here's the cool stuff they do. So what we're doing is we're actually creating content that teaches entrepreneurship. And we're saying, hey, this content is actually sponsored by Entrepreneurs International. If you'd like to, you know, learn more about the campaign, here it is. And then we associate that around the site with banner ads that are direct for the sale. So, hey, if you like this post from Entrepreneurs International, here's a banner that says, hey, go buy stuff. So we want to be careful, very, very careful about building trust with this marketplace. I was a little all over the place there, but it hopefully gave a little bit of nuggets to help everybody listening to kind of see the inner workings of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it makes sense. So let's say you have this piece of content. You've written it. It's exactly what you feel is going to work. Now, what do you do to distribute that content? Because posting it on the blog, yeah, it's nice and sweet, but a lot of people will not see it. What's your distribution process to actually get the eyeballs on that?
Yeah, so that's the million-dollar question, right? And that's what everyone wants, is the traffic to the post. So I will tell you some of the stuff that has worked and some of the stuff that hasn't worked. So I think this is really big lessons for everyone listening. So the stuff that has worked really well is when we involve other people in the process, right? So we wrote a post recently about 17 models who are redefining who the models are for this next generation. And they were models. One was this guy, Alex Minsky, who is a war veteran who lost his leg in the war, and now he's got a prosthetic leg. And he is a male fitness model. He's been on the cover of a lot of magazines. And so it was 17 folks like that. And so what we did is we involved those 17 people. So we asked them for quotes. We reached out to them when the post went live. We tagged them on Twitter and on Facebook and yada yada. And naturally, they want to tell people that they were featured. So they go out and they use their distribution channels to go and tell people about the post. Hey, I was just featured on ambitious.com, yada yada. And so we involved these 17 people. So instead of just using our social network, which right now is small, right? We're building our networks. Now I can go and leverage his 50,000 Twitter followers, his 100,000 Instagram followers. And you do that for 17 people. Well, now you have a really, really cool snowball effect. Now, what we need to do with that traffic when it comes in is what I just talked about earlier, is now these people are coming to this article from their distribution pipelines, seeing, hey, cool article about 17 models, I'm featured in it. Now we need to do our job and start turning those one-time visitors into email subscribers. Because every day, and this is true for every blog, you start at zero. Like, no one's coming to your website today unless you do some type of promotion to get people to come to your website, right? BuzzFeed, you know, for how big that they are, there's not a lot of people that wake up every morning and go and they type in BuzzFeed.com. They have to be triggered by a Facebook post or a share or something on Twitter or something on Instagram or a video. They have to be triggered to go to BuzzFeed. So they start at zero every day too. We start at zero every day. So leveraging all these other networks, driving traffic to us, and then us collecting emails allows us to send out daily emails that help us go from zero to a baseline of traffic every single day. So again, multi-prong approach. I think this is where a lot of people fail, is they just post something on Twitter and hope people see it. Well, we do that. We post stuff on Twitter and on Facebook, but then we involve the people that we talk about in the articles, who then send traffic back to the post. But then we start building the email list so that every day we send an email out, we don't start at zero. We might start at a few thousand, 10,000, 20,000 because of how big the email list is. So we have built-in distribution. And I think that's really, really important is you use the social channels, you do everything that you're supposed to do, you do your SEO and all that fun stuff, driving traffic, but you got to be building that email list, which is the real distribution pipeline, because now I have direct access to my readers, both to send them to new content and also to sell them stuff, which is the ultimate goal.
I actually like the reaching out to people approach, but let's go a little deeper in that. Take me through the points of contact for each one of these people for a normal article. So from the point where you first reach out to them to when you ask them to share and distribute that content, and maybe a follow-up or two afterwards. Like, I just want to know what your system is for that.
Yeah, so I think it actually starts with planning of who you actually want to feature, right? So we made some mistakes early on where we had some people with really, really great stories. So we wrote an article about, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, traveling on a business trip, and I got in an Uber, and the Uber driver happened to be a gospel hip-hop artist, and he was doing Uber to fund the recording of his album. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest story ever, right? This guy is super ambitious. He works a day job, and then he drives Ubers at night so he can fund the recording of his album. And I thought this is awesome. This is the definition of ambition. So we had one of my writers reach out to him and wrote a story on him. And the guy shared it. He posted on Facebook, but he's only got 14 Twitter followers.
Right.
It doesn't help feed the distribution pipeline. So I think it starts from the beginning. And now actually for our writers, so when they go through that 4-week internship process I talked about earlier, we actually have guidelines of how to find people that have a big enough reach and influence to talk about. Because if they don't have a combined social reach of at least 10,000 people, and that could be through multiple networks, through their Facebook friends, through their Facebook fan pages, through Facebook, through Instagram, whatever, then we don't talk about them. And it kind of sounds superficial or whatever, but we're in the traffic business, right? And I can't build something on the traffic business with someone who's only got 14 Twitter followers. So I think it starts from the planning process. And then what we do is we either look at, so do we want to just feature one person and it only gives us one shot to go to his networks? Or do we want to do a post that has like the 17 models that I just talked about? And what we do from an internal standpoint, from an editorial standpoint, is we say, all right, out of these 17, who are the 17 people that we want to go after? What is their total social reach? And then we actually go into their profiles and we say, hey, does this person share articles about themselves, right? Because if they're not actually sharing stuff, again, we're not going to reach out to them because they don't help to serve our purpose, right? And so it really starts from this research and planning phase. And then what we do is we say, all right, we got these 17 people combined. We have a reach of 2 million people if everyone does all their stuff. And I'm just making up numbers. I have no idea what their total social reach was. But, so they have a total social reach of this. Okay, let's green light that project. Let's have the writer write it. So sometimes we will do stuff without quotes and we'll just write like the 17 models post, and we'll just pick those 17 people and we won't tell them initially that we're writing about them. We'll do the telling on the backside. The other way is the curated post, where now we're going to go out to those 17 models and we'll ask them all a quote about the future of the modeling industry. And if someone was young and ambitious and maybe was, you know, a war veteran who got injured, or someone who got paralyzed, or someone with a disfiguration, or transgender, or whatever it is, and they want to be a model, what advice do you have for them? So that's the curated type of post. So that's where we reach out on the front end. So if we reach out on the front end, obviously we're getting the quote from them and then we're inserting it into the article. And then once the post goes live, we do send an email. We, coming from a copywriting background and from, I've done a lot in the internet marketing space. And so I looked at affiliate marketing, right? What works really well in a big affiliate marketing launch, and it's doing all the work for the affiliates, right? So it's writing all the email copy. It's giving them the banner ads. It's telling them exactly when to post. It's saying, hey dude, you know, just copy and paste this. Tom, just copy and paste this and send it at 2:00. I can't make this any easier for you. And so I took that same model and same approach to doing like a product launch in the internet marketing world or the info marketing space. And I applied that to content distribution. So I give them every piece and tool that they could possibly need. So if it's someone that has a big Instagram following, I make an Instagram photo for them. We make a Facebook photo for them. We write all the tweets out for them. We tell them when to post it, you know, when we ask for the share. But I make it so dead simple that they, of course, they want to do it. And I make them look good. The content looks good on the site. We love the aesthetics and making people look good. So they kind of want to share it because it makes them look good. So you are correct in that we reach out to them. We give them all the steps. And then we also follow up. And we also say thank you. I think this is a big thing. As we send an email, say, hey, Tom, I just wanted to say thank you for sharing that. You helped us reach an extra 15,000 people yesterday. You helped us reach an extra 500 people yesterday because of what you did and shared. And we wanted to say thanks. Some of the bigger folks, when we get them, one guy sent us like 15, 20,000 people in a day, we'll actually send them something in the mail. So maybe we'll send them a copy of one of my books or a beer of the month club, or we'll send them a bottle of wine. Or we saw one guy was a big fan of Nickelback. I think it was a joke because no one really likes Nickelback. But he said he liked Nickelback, and we went to eBay and we won an auction for a signed album from Nickelback, and we sent sent it to the guy because he sent us 25,000 people to the website. So very, very big on the thank you aspect of it. Then the final step in the process is once we say thank you and we've developed now a relationship with the person, then it's how can we take that relationship further and deeper? And so it's, so Tom, say you were the guy, you sent us a bunch of people, and this is true for podcasts too. So like I'm being interviewed on this podcast today. If it drives a bunch of traffic to ambitious.com, I'm going to send Tom a nice thank you gift. And I'm going to say, you know, hey Tom, this is awesome. And we did some cool stuff. Are there any people that you interview in the podcast that maybe I should talk to who would be cool for Ambitious? Or are there any podcasters out there you think, you know, I'd be a good fit for their show? Or is there a way that we can get you to contribute? Like, so I always see what's the next step that I can take with the person, right? So in the case of the models, are there any other models that weren't featured in the 17 that maybe you think we should go and profile that would be great for our Ambitious Humans feature? Do you have anything big coming up that you think we might feature for a current event style? So I always try to see what's the next step in the relationship, but it's always about how can I help them as well? So how can I continue to help you build relationship capital, all that stuff. So hopefully there were some nuggets in there that, that the listeners can take from it. But I think you're 100% correct in that you got to reach out to them. You got to say thank you. And then from our side, how can I use that and build relationship capital from it?
Yeah, when you ask the people later on for something extra, and usually you probably want to only ask for one thing. You don't want to ask them for like 15 different things because that's too much.
Right.
Would you give a value at that moment? So there's an exchange, like an even exchange, right? Because you're asking like, well, can you help me with this? But then before you ask them, can you help me with this now? You have to give something back. How do you work that in?
It depends on how the relationship goes, right? So I don't think this is a black and white thing. So, you know, if someone just tweeted something for me and it drove a bunch of traffic, usually just by me saying thank you and reaching out, that's kind of enough, right? So if the person went out of his way and he like custom did some stuff, again, we might send him the present, might send him something in the mail. So I'll send him a bottle of wine. Obviously, we track the shipping of that. So I know that Tom got his bottle of wine. You know, I shoot him an email. Hey, Tom, hope you got the wine. Hope you enjoyed it. Can we jump on a quick Skype call or can we jump on a quick Google chatter or whatever it is? Then we kind of ask for the S. The value really comes in. We've already helped them out by putting more people onto their story, the combined collectiveness. So I don't think that you need to go 20 steps above and beyond. I think that you've done a really good job in positioning the article. If you've done a really good job positioning the content, you've put eyeballs onto them and who they are. And then you kind of just say thank you. Maybe you send them a thank you gift. Most people are pretty cool. And again, I'm not asking for a huge ask. I'm just like, hey, is there anybody else I should talk to? And so I'm not asking for them to do something huge. If you've done a really good job in adding value and doing the thank you piece of it, I think that that is enough to get that relationship capital to the next level. Now, you got some guys who, A, they won't tweet for you. They won't Facebook for you. And, you know, we press a little bit and very lightly. So we might say, hey, Tom, just wanted to make sure that you saw the email. You know, the post is doing really well. We'd love your support on it. But after one or two of those follow-up emails, if they don't post, I kind of leave the guy alone. I don't want to be seen as the unwelcome pest. I want to be known as the welcomed guest in their life. And, you know, some people just don't jump on board. And that's totally cool. But the guys who do jump on board, they're usually very optimistic. Some people reply immediately, say, hey, Greg, just shared it. It's awesome. You know, the article came out so good. We really love it. And you can kind of see and sense their personality and what they want to do anyway. Again, it's not black and white. I wish I could say every time this is what happens, but you got to read the situation, read the person. There's some people you know that you can press a little bit more. There's other people. We had one model who we featured before the 17 model post who became paralyzed. She was either 18 or 19 years old. She was in college. She was a beautiful girl and she got paralyzed and she got really depressed and really down. And then she picked herself back up and she now is a cover model for magazines in the UK. And we reached out, we did the profile piece on her, and she was like, wow, this piece came out so good and so many people saw it. What else can I do for you? And we did such a good job that now she's like, hey, can I write for you? Can I send you more people? And so she actually added the value before we were even able to say it. So you have to do a good job on your end of creating great content, of building the story, of driving traffic, of all that. And the rest kind of falls in place like dominoes.
You know, when you have one article with 17 models, it's easy. But if you have 50 or 100 or 1,000 of these articles, how do you keep track of all the people and at which step you're in with each one of them? What is your tracking process like?
That's another million-dollar question, and it is not as good as it should be. There is a lot of whiteboards that we throw darts on, and they fall to the floor, and they suck, and they're terrible, and they work, and they don't work. I mean, we've had a lot of stuff just fall flat. The good news is that because we're creating such a volume of content, the bad ones, it's okay because the good ones kind of pick up for it. It's kind of like I listen to a lot of like venture capitalists. The one time I invested in Facebook made up for the 100 other companies I lost in. And the same in our eyes right now is true for content, is that for every one superstar post, there's 10 that kind of fall flat on his face, but we're doing such volume that I think it's okay. We do rely a lot on our writers doing some of this legwork, because if we were doing it all from a house account, there's no way we could manage that. So from a house account, we get behind one big, strong article per day. And that's really what we do is we say, all right, today, here's the content that's going out today. We have a content schedule thing. I wish I had a better name for it, but just a schedule, you know, of what's going out today. And myself, my editor, we look at it and we say, hey, out of these 10, and we guess. And I learned this from the guys at Upworthy, upworthy.com. They're really good at this, really great at creating viral headlines. And I was talking to one of the main editors there, and he's like, Greg, we freaking guess. He's just like, we guess at what content's going to be really good. And that's what we choose to get behind. And 9 times out of 10, we're freaking wrong. Like, we don't know what's going to go viral. Now we test headlines and we test a lot of that stuff, but on a day-to-day basis, so say there's 10 pieces of content going up today, we guess at which one we think is going to win. We don't always win. Like, sometimes we fail flat on our face. But again, now the next day we got 10 more. 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 And so it allows us to pick ourselves back up from the failures. The other thing is, again, we have that email distribution list to where even if we fall flat on our face on the social side, we're still guaranteed traffic because of the emails that are going out telling people, hey, here's all the new articles that went out today. So I think we have backup plans in place for when we do fail, and we fail. Don't get me wrong, man. We fail a freaking lot. And I think that's where we learn from. We learn from the headlines. We learn what kind of posts resonate. It's really weird. We've had, we wrote about 10 female comedians giving Amy Schumer a run for her money. I think we called it for a funny. It was a pun. Like, I didn't care for it at all. Maybe because I'm a dude and I'm not a big fan of female comedians, and now your female visitors hate me. But I didn't super care for it. It ended up being our highest trafficked article of all time. And it's because the females got behind it. And then there was another one we did when the Straight Outta Compton movie came, and we picked like the 23 most ambitious Straight Outta Compton memes that were out there. Fell flat on its face. And maybe, I don't even think it got 1,000 people to look at the thing. So we're always trying stuff. We're always testing stuff. And we're always trying to see what that next big piece of content is going to be for us. And then we learn from it, right? So we learn from the 10 comedians thing. We learned that people like comedy. People like videos. So we went out and we started now doing profiles on some of those comedians. And we started looking at other cars. And that's actually where the idea for the model article came from, was from the female comedians. So we're always learning from this stuff on a day-to-day basis.
In some ways, it seems like you're the face of the company. And on the podcast feature page, it says that you've been quoted and featured on a lot of these bigger media outlets. What is your method for reaching out to them and then getting promotion for this website in not a sleazy way, and not really like the newsjacking type thing that I've been reading about?
So prior to starting the Ambitious Media Group, and still, I'm a partner at the Celebrity Branding Agency, and we're a big media marketing PR firm. We have over 2,500 clients in 38 different countries, and we really help people on the PR side, and we help people to get into a lot of these publications. But I, at a young age, really started to understand the power of media and having a media platform, and that people pay attention to people with media, right? So I've been quoted in a lot of different newspapers and magazines. I've been on a lot of TV shows, and I knew that by being in these places, people would pay attention to me. They would think that I'm way more important than I really am. Like, I'm just a dude who's like a dad, and I got 2 kids, and I work my ass off, and I'm not as cool as I look on Facebook, right? But that's like everybody. But I understood very quickly that he who has the media and the distribution channels for that media has the power. So the first business I ever created was called Gen Y Rockstars. I was a touring musician. I toured all over the United States, played with all kinds of big major acts. And the way that we did that was by me barraging my way to getting press. And so we were, you know, I get my album reviewed by every like rag magazine, every rag newspaper, every weekly publication that there was in every city that we were going to play in. And it made us look a lot bigger than we were. So I could go to a venue in a new city that I'd never seen before and say, hey, you should really book us to play here because we just got a 5-star album review from the weekly magazine that's in your town. And so a lot of people want to see us. We have demand, right? We didn't have any demand. I just found the writer for that publication and I called him. I talked to him. I built up a real relationship with them. And he was like, dude, I'd love to review your album. And then again, you got to have the product to back it up. Our album was really good. And he was like, wow, this is really good. So I'm going to write about it. So I knew from an early age that having that was really powerful. Then I started teaching musicians this concept. And when I started building that brand, I knew that I didn't really have much credibility in the music space. So I needed to go and get it. So I started writing for all the big music publications. I started writing for Hypebot, and I started writing for Reverb Nation, who had about 1 million musicians working for them. I started guest posting for Mashable. I started writing for Fast Company about musicians. And all of a sudden, now I was taken seriously because I had these media mentions. And how I really did it is through brute force, but adding value to the media channel. So when I went to Mashable, and this is now 5-6 years ago when I started writing for them, is I went to them and I presented really, really good ideas that they weren't covering. So at the time, they weren't really heavy into the entertainment space. Now they are. Now they're covering like when Justin Bieber gets a haircut, but they weren't back then. And so I came to them and I presented like, here's the articles, here's the research, here's who I can go and talk to. I did this thing where the first article I wrote for them was 5 ways that musicians are using social media to go platinum or to break out or whatever it was. I told them, hey, I can get interviews with these 5 artists. I didn't have relationships with those artists, but I knew that if I went to those artists and said, hey, I'm writing a post for Mashable, that I could get the attention of those artists. And that's exactly what I did. So I went to Mashable. I said, here's what I want to do. Here's who I'm thinking of the context. And Mashable was like, oh my God, if you can do this, like we'll crush it. So then I went to those 5 artists and I said, hey, I'm doing this thing for Mashable. They get this many visitors. And they were like, oh my God, what can we do for you? And so sometimes I didn't get the actual artist. I got their manager or I got their publicist or something, but I got these 5 artists. And so I really leveraged that. And then I went to Mashable and I gave them the article and we did a lot of revisions. And the article was really, really good. It wasn't fluff. It wasn't something that I wrote in 5 minutes. It probably took 3 weeks to write the article. Most people won't spend 3 weeks writing one piece of content, but I did it. And all of a sudden it's getting thousands of shares and hundreds of comments. And all of this has a byline that says, hey, this post is written by Greg Rolette from this website. Go here if you want to learn more from him. Well, thousands of people went to my website and opted in for my free reports. And then I sold them products and services. So again, leveraging other people's media to build my own media platform was huge. And now I'm just taking that to Ambitious and I'm doing that 10X that. And we talked earlier about giving the power to the journalists. That's what I'm doing for them. I'm giving them the platform that I was given to help break my career. I'm allowing them to write on my platform to build their own platform because there's such power in having that.
Very cool. So if people want to reach out to you and find you, where could they go?
Obviously, I'd love them to just check out ambitious.com. I'm really easy to find on social media. I'm just Greg Rolette everywhere, Facebook and the Twitter and all that fun stuff.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.